Welcome to the AIRL podcast, the show where we explore the fascinating world of artificial intelligence and its impact on our lives. I'm your host, Mark Kelly, and I'm thrilled to have you joining us today. Each week, we delve into the cutting-edge developments, breakthrough technologies, and innovative applications of AI right here in Ireland and beyond. As Ireland emerges as a global hub for AI research and development, we are here to bring you insightful conversations with leading experts, entrepreneurs and thought leaders who are at the forefront of this exciting revolution. So get ready to expand your knowledge and be inspired by the incredible possibilities that lie ahead. But before we dive in, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if you enjoy what you hear, we'd love it if you could leave us a review and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. Together, let's spread the AI revolution. Hey everyone, it's Mark Kelly, CEO and President of AI Ireland. I hope you're doing really well wherever you are in the world today. We are very, very happy to have Anita Moen. Anita is a Senior Scientific Officer at NSAI, and he is coming onto the show today to tell us a little bit about his work and some of the work that NSAI does in Ireland. Anita, thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks, Mark, and my pleasure to be on the show.
Before we jump into your current role at NSAI, tell us a little bit about your background, because it's quite an interesting background how you came into this role.
Yeah, I was a graduate in instrumentation engineering, which is more process and control, so more manufacturing side. But it so happens that I landed my first job at IBM. I was deep into the world of software at IBM India when I moved to IBM Ireland, and where at the start of commercialization of artificial intelligence into cloud-based products and services, that is where I entered. I was one of the first few members of the IBM Watson team in Europe. And thereafter, it was a very interesting journey, deployed several solutions across Europe in mostly natural language processing. And it was a very interesting experience. But at some point of time, I realized that the world of policy and regulation would be important, because artificial intelligence, being a new world, would need some of its own rules to govern it. So that is the time. So 2 years back, I switched to National Standards Authority of Ireland, as well as AI regulation, which is coming through EU AI Act, and day-to-day policies.
So when we look at your foundation, it was a really good background coming from IBM Watson, because obviously IBM were so far ahead of nearly every company in terms of what they were trying to do with AI. And actually, I can imagine as an organization, it would have been a very exciting time to be working in the world of artificial intelligence then. And as you rightly said, we need regulation and we need some guardrails and rules around AI, because AI is very different to a lot of different technologies. AI has got the power for good, but also in the wrong hands, it could do a lot of damages, particularly with disinformation as a potential starting point. So tell us a little bit more into NSAI and what you do and what that actually role is.
So primarily, NSAI's standards division is all about setting standards, writing standards. Now, you would imagine that if Europe wants to be competitive, it wants to export its products, and it wants to use products from everywhere else. For interoperability, it is best that our standards are the same as standards elsewhere. So there's no point writing Irish standards for technologies that are used seamlessly with other technologies developed in other parts of the world. So the approach at NSAI as far as AI, but even other ICT standards, is that we contribute as a member nation to ISO standards and to European standards through ISO and SEN. And once those standards have been published, we adopt them. This way, we have the best practices that the rest of the world follows, and our products are in line with other products and services so that they are usable by other parts of the world and vice versa.
So there's a few different reasons for it then as well, that people can actually can not even take into consideration, but it's that interoperability where you want to have that consistent standards
across different continents, because it makes it so much easier to sell his different types of services and products. And you know, most importantly, if you've got a really good product in the US or services using AI and you want to put it into Europe, it's got to have certain foundations that make it acceptable to use and people to engage in. Tell us a little bit about your cooperation and commitment to different parts of the world that are actually outside of Ireland, where you're also providing input, and maybe where other NSAI members are putting input to some very important proposed laws that will probably be soon ratified.
Interesting question. So two things. One is that the way we work is NSAI has a national committee of AI experts from universities, from multinational, from small enterprises, and from the citizens around. And this national committee through NSAI participates at ISO level as experts of Ireland. They contribute to the drafts of standards. They vote on various aspects of these drafts. And when it gets published, we know that our experts have contributed. They know what has gone into that standard. So we adopt that standard. So this is the way we work. And on that aspect of interoperability, it's very important that there is a limited pool of experts who have limited pool of time. And most of the ISO and SEN work is voluntary. There is no monetary compensation to experts. So it is best that there is no duplication of effort. So the same set of experts from Europe also participate at ISO as well as SEN. So if something very good and mature has been produced by ISO, it is in interest that Europe either adopts it as it is or adapts it with a European specification amended to it. That is another aspect why our experts contribute at both places, but we make the most efficient path to adopt the standards.
So with AI, it's particularly challenging because, like any technology, you do not necessarily know the impact across society for many years later. And we've seen with AI, it's been consistently growing and growing in terms of popularity. Last year with OpenAI and generative AI, it became like overnight success. They gave an interface to a technology that was already there. However, I'd like to see this and speak about this as more like the new AI. So we've got like our AI that's been running recommendation engines for things like Netflix, Amazon, drug discovery that's happening in the background. However, with generative AI, it's like in your face. People from sales, marketing, people who can use content creation. We've seen it from like Midjourney, from imagery. It seems to be really just impactful for a variety of different ways that your average Joe blogs can start to utilize and engage with it very quickly. What types of considerations do you have to take into play when you're trying to add in some guardrails or some safety, privacy, aspects that you have to trust it and utilize it?
As a technologist and as somebody who worked in commercial industry, I would make a statement of balance, first of all, that like any technology, whether it was nuclear technology or smartphones, its use or misuse is obviously in the hands of its users. So it is the same with AI. AI is just a technology. How we use it entirely depends on us as members of society. But moving on from that, I would say that the efficiency of scale that AI provides makes it very attractive. And because it is a generic tool for several problems of processing image scans in a hospital, process a problem of scanning through thousands of CVs to filter out those few CVs you would like to interview. And that is the reason that AI is so attractive. Now, coming to generative AI, I would say that is certainly a leap that has happened in last year. Because now, there is something in front of you. You can log in and ask. You can prompt it to provide you with things which was not possible just 2 years back, because models were made to your requirement. They were very expensive. They were not generic. And you had to be a developer or a deployer to use it. Now with ChatGPT and Midjourney, there is something accessible to you. You can play with it in a usual language. You don't have to write a piece of code. And you can apply it to a lot of common day-to-day aspects of your job. And that is what makes it so attractive. But also, that is what makes it, I would say, a matter of caution that even the slightest mistake on your part to interpret what is being told to you or what is being presented to you can pass on as a fact into the business or into the public domain. So that is why generative AI raises several questions about caution and about governance.
Yeah, and it's like a double-edged sword because it's really awoken the general public up to AI and the possibilities of it. So in one way, society is not ready for all these different changes that are happening because they're happening so quickly. But in another way, people are asking questions about AI and possible concerns and worries are flagged a lot sooner. And I like the idea of that balanced approach between the innovation and guardrails and privacy and working with trust. So it's just trying to understand that we're all trying to input here and add value, but there's going to be some bad actors along the way that are going to utilize this. And how do we minimize that? Now, we've seen in the US where we had the top seven AI firms come together with President Biden about creating certain foundations that they'll really heavily test their AI before bringing it into the marketplace, having watermarks. Subsequently, we've had eight other firms, such as firms from Palantir, join those initial seven. So we're seeing more, you know, people putting their hands and actually saying, what, this is something that we're really serious about. Because fundamentally, if we don't trust this, people won't use it. And then you won't be able to buy or sell it because you won't get past the safety standards within different organizations. Why is driving through an EU regulation act particularly challenging to do? Because obviously this act has been proposed for a long time now, but even now we're still not ratified. What makes it so challenging to get it across the line?
A few things, Mark. One is that just talking through your earlier part of the question, it is possible that industry can regulate itself, but so far we have seen that it's not been easy. And one player in the industry's idea of regulation could be different from another player's idea of regulation. Not only that, it could vary depending on geos. One geo has tighter requirements, one geo has more liberal requirements. The idea is that instead of industry regulating it, reacting to the individual governments, it is best that there is a wider frame. It is on that basis that NIST has, the United States Standards Regulatory Body, has come up with a guideline. ISO is coming out with 42001, which will be published soon, to lay down those good governance principles based on which any organization which produces or uses AI works through deploying its product or service. Now, coming to AI Act, because of this risk that it poses to society if it is not governed, AI Act took a harm-based approach. It classifies all AI systems based on the harm it can cause. So if the potential to harm is very high, then it's a high-risk system. Some examples are biometric systems that evaluate and give grades in education, or systems that monitor critical infrastructure like airports, etc. So those are high-risk systems. Then there are medium-risk systems, and then there are low-risk systems. And based on what classification AI system or application falls into, EU AI Act will define what it has to do to be able to deploy itself in the market, what kind of conformity, what kind of day-to-day monitoring and governance it has to do.
So it's a ever evolving, the cheese is always moving. And one way you'll have the act in place, but I'm sure I need to keep updating because AI is moving and changing so quickly. Recently, I figured out how to clone my own voice. And this was so bizarre to be able to actually clone your own voice and use it. And you can do crazy things with the world of deep fakes and things like this. What does the mindset then become in terms of this technology that's moving so quickly? How does regulation even try to stay up?
I think the first EU AI Act that will be applicable from January 25, I would definitely say that it will only lay the foundation for next 2-3 years. As you say, technologies will evolve. Generative AI is not the first leap. There will be several. And there will be amendments to the Act. The high risk list will change. Medium risk list will change. The European AI board will have to play a catch up. It will have to keep changing things as the industry produces more innovative solutions. Or if incidents come to light, if the EU AI Act makes provision for market monitoring authorities. So these authorities will notice incidents and they will report back. And that will form the basis of if the AI Act is sufficient. Should it have amendments? Should it do something more? Should more standards be written to be used by the industry? So yeah, in something which is so evolving and which has so much potential, there will always be a need to keep track of how regulation is working.
Am I right in saying that there's an Irish National Committee member that's actually taking a lead in some of these projects?
Yes. So Ireland has punched way above its weight. Being a small EU nation, we have a project editor of ISO 42001, which is a management system standard for AI. We have the convenership of Working Group 3, which is the trustworthy AI working group at ISO. And we are very active participants at both ISO and CIN. And we have visibility at several other forums like Stand ICT. And I myself would be representing Ireland at the General Partnership on AI, GPAI Summit, in a few months' time, where I'll be presenting a paper. So I'll say, because of the presence of industry and our universities, we have very active participants at world level.
It's one of these topics, Adi, where we can actually talk about it for a long time and dissect it down into so many different areas. But as a starting point, that this has been very beneficial for our listeners and for myself, even finding out more about what's happening. I expect the AI Act to be ratified by the end of the year, maybe the next 3 to 4 months. So let's see what happens and what progresses there to have. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks, Mark. It's been an interesting conversation.
Membership of AI Ireland places your organization at the center of the fastest growing technology sector in the world today. As a member, you'll have access to our diverse and highly engaged professional community, which is committed to driving artificial intelligence forward in Ireland. Membership of AI Ireland is for any organization, including data and analytics. We offer memberships to corporate, government, and SME organizations. Interested to find out more? Contact mark@aiawards.ie.